Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hello, welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. Here's another episode. Believe it or not, we're still going. And considering the time frame that we're in right now, the kind of climate, business climate, there's also a health crisis. And I've been sort of marking these, even though I feel that they're timeless, I think it's a good idea to really say when it's actually happening. So today is May 7th, 2020. And I am interviewing Mr. Jeffrey Garnett. He owns a company with his wife. It's called Clean Slate. It's a tattoo removal company. And I'm going to let Jeff talk to us about how his business is going through specific changes that some would say are a reflection of the climate that we're in right now, business climate, and also the health crisis that we're having. So Jeff, talk to us about Clean Slate and welcome back to the show.
Hello, how are you?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Awesome. Great. I'm glad to hear it. And thank you again for having me. It's always a pleasure, Toni. Clean Slate, where do I start? I guess, my wife and I started Clean Slate in 2012 with a business plan, our life savings, and a dream. And we opened a little 500 square foot office in White Plains. We didn't want to deal with investors or anything like that. So we just kind of grew the company organically and slowly over time. Each year we got a little bigger, and then we opened another location, and we now remove several thousands of tattoos every single year. We have six locations in New York and New Jersey, and have definitely built it into one of the most respected brands in the tattoo removal industry. But it hasn't been easy, you know, just kind of shoestringing it along and kind of borrowing money from Peter to pay Paul and whatever we have to do, sometimes credit cards, whatever has been necessary. But we've gotten it there, and we're still far from our ambition, but we're in a pretty good spot, or at least we thought we were until March of this year when the coronavirus came and just kind of shook our plans up and down. To give you, I guess, some perspective, our January and February numbers were up 130%. From this time last year. We were extremely optimistic and aiming to get a double this year in our revenue. We opened a brand new location in Brooklyn on February 7th, which required a six-figure investment in a new laser. And we hired three new trainee technicians and started training them. We were all very excited and very optimistic. And fast forward a month and a week to March 16th, and we were shutting our doors on all six locations.
Wow.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying and heartbreaking. I had to at least temporarily lay off my employees, which was awful. And I had to go and talk to all my creditors and my landlords and everything, as well as figure out how I'm going to pay my personal bills and everything. It's rough. At the same time, you're worried about healthcare and my family. My son's a senior in high school. He's lost his prom and his graduation and his hockey team. This was his last year of high school hockey. They qualified for states. They were all excited to go and try to win states and go to nationals. And that got canceled. So it's been rough. But that being said, things are starting to change and change significantly. I think the first few weeks, I was just shell-shocked, like a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners that I've been speaking to. And I kind of got a little depressed and just sat at home and watched Netflix and really did very little of anything productive. And it was dark. It was a dark time. A lot of anxiety, a lot of uncertainty, and just freaking out, trying to figure out what I was going to do. Now, a big part of my advertising is something called Google AdWords, which is pay-per-click search engine marketing, which if you're good at it, can be quite effective, but it is expensive, but it's relative to the money it can bring in if you do it properly. So I turned off my Google Ads and my other sorts of advertising because I didn't have a way to monetize it with our locations closed. But a few weeks ago, I crept out from under my covers and started sneaking around online and seeing what my competitors were doing. I noticed that all my competitors did the same thing. They had all paused their advertising accounts. I was like, you know what? This is scary as hell because I'm not going to be able to monetize this right away. But I'm going to start putting some ads out there and see if maybe I can build up kind of a ground swelling of client flow for when we do open up instead of waiting and shuffling at the last minute.
What was your rationale to start advertising?
I do come from a finance background, and there's an old saying on Wall Street that says, buy when there's blood on the streets. And it's basically just kind of a contrarian mentality that these bubbles in the stock market happen when everything looks great and everybody's buying, but somebody's that last person buying. And when the market crashes and everybody's lost hope and everybody's selling the last penny of their 401ks and it's all out, there's always one or two really smart people that are just down there bargain hunting and buying it all in cheap, whether it's stocks or real estate or whatever it may be. And I tried to look at the situation through those eyes. So there are quite often times where I might pay as much as $8 to $10 for a single click on Google. And what I did was I pulled all my bids down to below a dollar a click, and I pulled my budgets way down as well in all my various campaigns. I was shocked to see that I started getting clicks. I wasn't getting quite as many as I was when I was spending $700 a day, but I was getting about 50% of the amount of clicks, but I was spending $50 a day. So, I mean, huge, huge value. So I crept it up a little bit, nowhere near to what I was before. I noticed over the next week or so, I was able to come close to the amount of traffic, but my average cost per click dropped 80%.
That's a bargain.
Absolutely. So I know there's going to come a point in 2 weeks from now, as more and more of these reopening phases open up and people start going back, other people are going to jump in and start advertising again. And the supply and demand is going to shift. And these ads that right now you can get for a dollar or two a click are going to go back to $8 to $10 a click. And I'd be furious at myself if I didn't take more advantage of it, because you're talking about internet marketing rates, media rates that are equivalent to 2008, 2009. And on top of that, if you look at right now, Facebook advertising and Instagram advertising, there is way more engagement on the internet right now because people aren't at work. They're at home and they've already watched everything on TV. They're on their phones, they're on their internet engaged, but there are far few advertisers because everyone's pulled their advertising budget. So there's tremendous value in digital media right now if you know how to find it. But this is a very temporary thing. I think people are starting to see it. And I think within the next couple of weeks, you're going to see things scurry back. Now, obviously, we don't know exactly what the economy is going to look like when it comes back. But I certainly am doing some bargain hunting right now.
Why are you saying in the next couple of weeks? What makes you say that or believe that?
Well, in New York or the tri-state area, which is some of the hardest hit areas in the country, they are starting, I don't know the details, but they're starting a four-phase rollout to reopen the economy.
Yes.
And the first phase, I believe, is manufacturing and construction. And then the second phase is professional services, law firms, things like that. And then little by little, you're going to roll into hair salons and spas and eventually eat in restaurants and things. They're going to roll these things out and they're going to stop. And I'm sure there will be a bump in testing, you know, as long as they're testing alongside of it, they try to isolate it. But obviously, as people come out, you're going to see a resurgence of some infections,
yeah.
I would think. But obviously, I think we've all learned a lot through the last couple of months, and hopefully it can be done in a organized and controlled fashion. I know that might be overly optimistic of me based on some of the mishandlings that have happened, but this, I think, came and just kind of sucker punched everybody. No matter how much warning you get for something like this, nobody's really expecting us to be in the state that we're in. So obviously, a lot of people went through horrible health crises. A lot of people died. A lot of people lost their loved ones. And that really puts things in perspective. Obviously, tons of businesses have been destroyed, but health and the care of our loved ones comes first. But that being said, I think in any culture, but especially in America and especially in New York, where we are a culture here where we fight through adversity. And I think, you know, you look at how people came together after September 11th and a lot of other things that you see happen historically, we get hit with these really, really negative, horrible tragedies, but we find a way to come through and come out better. There is a silver lining. People are learning. I would like to believe that people are learning when they see how much pollution is down right now. And of course, there's going to be a percentage of the population that's going to say, screw it. And they're going to go right back to the stupid crap that they were doing before. But I think there are some people when you see the pictures of areas where you can see the Himalayas, where they weren't visible for the last 30 years because of smog and things like that. And, you know, maybe people learn, maybe at least a percentage of the population opens their eyes. Maybe some of these companies realize, you know what, we don't have to have these huge offices because, you know, we could have 50% of our workforce working from home and it works quite effectively and is going to save us some money. And that cuts down on commuting and other things.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I notice it where I live because I live in a small city. There's a lot less noise out there. It's incredible. I got to say, the air is clean. I remember I used to only open my windows on Sunday because that was the least amount of traffic. And so that was the least amount of noise pollution and the least amount of air pollution that would come in the window. I really kind of like it. I do.
Yep. It's nice. Look, there's obviously there's a lot of negative things going on and there's a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty. But I do think, like anything else, you have to look for the positive things and the silver lining in the situation. A couple of weeks ago, I was just going nuts in my house and I wanted to go out and just drive my car somewhere. I wasn't going to go and interact with anybody. I just wanted to get my car and go drive somewhere. I didn't know where I was going to go. Now, I live in White Plains. White Plains, normally, if I was going to drive to Midtown Manhattan, it could take me an hour, hour and a half to get there easily with traffic and stuff. I left my house. I drove down the West Side Highway. I got down to 42nd Street and I drove completely across town through Times Square and by Grand Central Station, got all the way to the East Side, got to the FDR and drove all the way back home to White Plains. And I did stop once and fill up my gas tank. And the whole thing took an hour and 5 minutes.
See, there's no traffic. You thought of it before me. I was thinking this would be the best time to maybe drive into Manhattan and visit my friends in Manhattan. I could park on the street. There's no traffic. There's no pollution. Yeah, you did the first experiment. I better hurry up before it's too late.
I do have to admit, though, driving through Times Square and barely seeing anybody, it was extremely creepy. Extremely creepy. It seemed just like what's that Will Smith movie? Like I Am Legend. There was just like nobody anywhere. And I did actually record a little bit of it on my phone. It was very eerie and just so quiet to see Manhattan like that. That being said, just to kind of regroup, I do think people are going to start coming out and hopefully it's done in a responsible and safe way so we don't go right back and have a second wave of death and sickness and stuff. But moving forward, I do think if people who are business owners, if they kind of shake things off for a moment and take a look at it, there are some tremendous opportunities right now.
You definitely have to think differently. And there's some advantage for people that are in businesses of making your own decisions and also having that time. And there's a lot of time to think of things, to think about things. I believe that you talked about going out on a limb with your own money.
Yeah.
I think that it takes a tremendous amount of confidence to do something like that. You're very sure of yourself, Jeff.
Being an entrepreneur and a business owner is an absolute emotional roller coaster. There are days where it is so exciting and it's such a thrill. And there are days where it is absolutely terrifying, where you're like, what the hell am I doing? I had a good job. I was making good money. My kids had security. Everything was paid for. Now it's eat what you kill. And there are times where things aren't looking good and you stay up at night and you stress out and you have these horrible thoughts into your mind. And I think a huge part of it, and this affects anybody in sales or performance-based jobs, but I think even more so when you're a business owner and you employ people and you have people whose family lives and their bread and butter are all dependent. You have all this responsibility of all these people's lives in your lap. It's a lot of pressure. When it's good, it's amazing. But when it's bad, it's horrible. It's terrifying. I think the ability to kind of navigate and manage your emotions and not give in to the fear is a critical part of being a successful entrepreneur and business owner.
Do you think that it's basically, though, your nature might be different than the average business owner? I went to a Zoom business meeting one time with the chamber, and I was just very surprised at, the posturing that individual businesses kind of took in the discussion. I wonder, if you think that some things should stay the way they are. Perhaps it would be a good idea, as you suggest, and as many have suggested, for business owners who have employees that employ people, even big business, very big business, maybe it is a good idea that for them to have 50% of their workforce work from home. Most people have some level of computer savvy. I think there are things, customer service they're doing from home, some companies.
Absolutely. Sometimes for there to be a big shift, a big paradigm shift or a big culture shift in the way things get done, sometimes you need some pain to kick you out of your comfort zone. If you look at these big law firms, and they're spending a fortune for this prime real estate in Manhattan. They're spending all this money to have 100 or 200 employees in this ridiculously expensive, posh office space in Manhattan, when really they need some of the partners to have that space and maybe a big boardroom. But a lot of the associates that are doing the lower level work, they could certainly work through Zoom and some of this new technology that is just changing everything. It certainly is impacting the stock market. The New York Stock Exchange, these floor-based old school exchanges had been being slowly replaced for decades by electronic trading, but there was never really that kind of final blow. The traders just out of habit, there were traders on the floor still. And now something like this comes along and it's like, all right, we don't need that anymore. And the floor brokers all are working from home with electronic trading screens.
Is it as effective?
You're going to have pros and cons. Obviously, there are some advantages to working with people face to face. But aren't there some advantages to also expanding your potential employee pool from the local area to the whole world? The talent pool changes considerably. For us, we always did everything face-to-face. I can't laser somebody electronically, but what I've been doing for the last few weeks is video consultations. So now if a normal new client would come into my office normally and want to find out about getting a tattoo removed, they would come in, they'd sit down with me, I'd spend 10, 15 minutes explaining the process to them, looking at their tattoo, going over pricing, answering any questions, and then they'd have to spend 5 minutes filling out paperwork. And then at the end of all that, we'd laser them for about a minute. It's very quick to actually laser them. What's happening now is we're doing these Zoom consultations or FaceTime consultations, and we're doing all the non-laser stuff we're doing remotely. And now I'm even emailing them the paperwork. So now they're going to come into the office, get lasered, and go home. They're going to be in my office for 5 minutes, which means my laser techs, who are my biggest asset, are my laser techs. So now I can have them lasering 4 people an hour instead of 1 or 2 people an hour. And that just means I need someone else who understands it, but doesn't necessarily have to be there with laser on the phone or on their computer doing consultations all day. It just is more efficient and it streamlines it.
It sounds like a great plan. Now, I just want to share with the audience and comment on your appearance on CBS Sunday morning last week. I have to say, she stopped you from stripping all the way down, but people would not realize that the guy that takes the tattoos off is covered with beautiful ink. You have very elaborate, beautiful, beautiful designs on you.
Thank you very much. That's what really got me into this industry in the first place, is that I truly love tattoos. I think it is such an impressive art form. When you see some of these elaborate designs, I'd be thrilled if I could draw something with a piece of paper and a pencil, or paint something halfway as good as some of this work. But to actually not only have the artistic ability to create that, but then have the technical skill to take a pin that is vibrating back and forth super quickly and basically stab that ink underneath somebody's skin without doing so much damage that it scars the texture, but really is creating into a living canvas. I just think it's fascinating. And I've always loved them since I was a kid. The moment I turned 18, I started getting tattoos, to my parents' dismay. But fast forward 30 years later, the artwork and the craft and the technology behind it has all improved significantly. So the quality of the tattoos have improved significantly. And that's created not only my interest in tattoo removal, because I wanted to get rid of my old crappy tattoos and replace them with new beautiful ones, but it's also created a huge opportunity within the industry, because you have real tattoo enthusiasts. It's not just people who outgrew a tattoo or don't like tattoos anymore. You also have the people who love tattoos want to make room for the newer, nicer artwork.
It's a little more elaborate than just getting a new hairstyle or changing your hair from brown to blonde. But I hear what you're saying about that. I'm fascinated by them too, as we've discussed, you and I, that I have absolutely no ink on me, zero. But mm-hmm. I did get a henna tattoo once. I got a beautiful henna tattoo at a fancy fundraiser I went to. They had a woman in the corner giving henna tattoos. And I said, let me just see how I feel about this. And I got to mm-hmm. say, even though it only lasted for 2 weeks, I just loved it. And I had it on my hand and it was gorgeous. And I can't wait to get another one. Now, I'm not getting one now because there'd be no one really to see it. But I'm very fascinated with the culture. Getting back to your CBS interview, you were talking about how your business came to a grinding halt, but your enthusiasm was still there. I just want to share a little bit about your mindset. We have shared something about your mindset, but the way you can just kind of dust yourself off and forget about what's going wrong and move on to the next flower, there's some kind of a gift or talent to that, to being able to do that. There aren't many of us that are that way.
That's a good question. Sometimes I think I'm insane. Sometimes I think I'm just stubborn. And sometimes I think I've just run out of other options, you know, mm-hmm. where it's like, all right, I have to do it. Damon John from Shark Tank and FUBU is a client of ours, and he's a brilliant, brilliant man. And he wrote a book called The Power of Broke. And what he talks about in that book is the mindset of when you have no other options and you have to get the job done because it's the only way to survive. There's an old cliche story that people tell all the time. It's in a lot of old motivational books about, I think it was like the conquistadors or something had come to an island and they burned their boats behind them in order to, and said to the troops, the only way you're getting off this island alive is if you win this battle, and they won it. But mm-hmm. in Damon's book, what he talks about, which I think is much more relatable, is in today's world where you have crowdfunding and venture capitalists and angel investors and different online forums for investment, you have a lot of entrepreneurs that actually raise money too quickly, too soon. And what that does is by all of a sudden, before their business is fully developed and their model has worked out all the kinks, they have, you know, $10 million in the bank account. And when you have $10 million in the bank account, you can make mistakes in a massive, massive level, or you can completely go down a wrong sub-direction of your business and not know it because you're still afloat. Whereas when you're broke, you're in survival mode. So you have to cut all the fat and you have to manage your time and your resources and every penny and every asset that you have, you need to get the most return out of, especially your time and your attention. And that's what he talks about. He talks about in the early stages of FUBU where he just didn't have the money or the resources, but he went around Queens and found these young early influencers in the hip hop industry and had them wear his clothes. And then he'd take a picture. There was no posting it on Instagram. He would go around and show it to stores and be like, look, this is LL Cool J wearing a FUBU thing. Everyone in the street's going to want this. You have to have it. And he hustled and he made it work. If someone had given him $5 million ahead of time, maybe he would have spent money, blown money on some TV ads at the time. And maybe he doesn't get that picture with LL Cool J. And maybe he doesn't do some of the stuff that nobody else is willing to do. Like, you know, he hired graffiti artists to paint FUBU on all the grates that would pull down from the stores.
Oh, I
so
love
at night,
that.
When
I
everything
love...
shut down, right. they'd pull it down. And he had tons and tons of free advertising.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that desperation of not knowing where your next meal is going to come from sometimes makes those creative juices flow and mm-hmm. gets you to do stuff. And I think that's where some of us are right now. It's like, what am I going to do? I can't go out of business right now.
Right.
I can't do that to myself, to my family, to my employees, even to my customers who have bought prepaid packages from us. I can't leave them hanging. So
yeah.
It's like, all right, we got to figure this out. We need to make it work.
So you figure out something in what you've described before with advertising is guerrilla marketing. I've always been a big fan of guerrilla marketing, but let me just digress, but really move forward at the same time. I can do that. I know that you have very special clientele because you have talked about them. And I think it's really important for business people to appreciate their clientele. And as someone's client, and also as a business person, I do have empathy for both sides, and I do know the importance of that. You have been doing some philanthropic work. I did talk to Mary about something that you were doing early on. Tell us a little bit about this client. You can even share what we talked about last night about working with this particular population with regard to tattoo removal.
Absolutely. And this is a part of my business and my job that I absolutely love, being able to give back some and have a positive impact in some people's lives, especially someone who really, really is working hard and really deserves it. Tattoos have been a part of several cultures. They're a big part of the military culture, but they're also are a big part of gang culture. And there are certain tattoos that have certain meanings. And sometimes it's like a rite of passage when you go into a gang and you get certain gang tattoos. What happens is you do have some troubled youth who get involved in gang life, and they'll get a lot of tattoos, a lot of visible tattoos on their hands, their face, their neck. Like I said, I love tattoos. I'm not here to judge anybody or say that these tattoos are good or these tattoos are bad. But what I am saying is that all of us make a lot of mistakes, especially when we're young. But a lot of us don't have to wear those mistakes on our face once we grow out of it. And that is the really difficult thing about tattoos, is there are few things in life that are so permanent. You can get divorced, you could get a new job, you can sell your house, you could get a new car, but you have a tattoo, it's permanent up until recently. And even with the new technology, there's some people that just don't have the resources or the money to go through it. So one of the things that we do is we have a program called Fresh Start, where we can't do it for everybody, but when we see examples of reform gang members who are really working hard to turn their lives around, we will do some pro bono work and we'll donate our services to try to help them. Because think about this. Think about if you had years of a really difficult life and now you spent the last 3-4 years really, really trying to turn yourself around and you can't get a legitimate job because your face is covered in tattoos. And no matter how hard you try, keep getting categorized. So a year ago, I met a really impressive young man named Mauricio. Tragic, really sad story. His father was murdered when he was 9 years old. He was Colombian. His mother brought him and the kids here to New York, grew up in Queens. And he had a really rough childhood. He grew up around drugs and gang life, and he got involved, got mixed up in it. He ended up really being covered really big, really visible face, neck, hand tattoos. And he did end up having a lot of problems with addiction. Amazing story. About 6-7 years ago, met a really positive woman who had a huge impact on his life. They got married. She introduced him to the church, helped him get clean, helped him get back into school, get his priorities straight. And now he's been clean and sober for 6 years. He's heavily involved with the church. He is in college, taking these specialized courses. He's working, he's supporting his family. But still, even with his new education and degrees that he has, when he goes for certain types of job interviews, they don't see the impressive, hardworking, determined young man that he is right now. They see a gang kid. They see the person he was 10 years ago. And no matter what he does to his appearance, he's going to get categorized as that. That's really sad. Now, on top of that, there's also a danger risk to it. Just having some of these gang tattoos, if you walk into the wrong neighborhood or someone from a rival gang sees you, even if you're no part of that gang life anymore, you're in danger. So anyway, I was really impressed by this young man. So we've decided to donate our services to him. And we've been working with him for about a year now. And his tattoos aren't completely gone. We have to do little bits and pieces at a time. But we've made amazing progress. And I'd say some of them are probably about 70 to 80% done. We're going to keep going. And he's just such an impressive man. When you hear him and you hear how positive he is and his attitude is just fantastic, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to go on to do amazing things in his life.
So he'll be an example for other people. And I'm looking forward to meeting him next week. I'm very excited about that. Other people have told me that I've respected, have always said, and I say the same thing, that you have to give back to the community in some way, especially because you can. Even when you think that you don't have anything to give, but you really are doing a very generous thing, because I know that it's a very tedious process to remove those tattoos. So Jeff, any kind of advice you can give small businesses? Like, there's some of us are micro enterprises, and then there's small business. And I understand your mindset. I know you. I have to thank you so much for always giving me the best business advice. I won't say the best because I don't want anybody to get insulted, but you've always given me very, 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 very good business advice. And I have never really gone wrong with the things that I've learned from you. What could you tell people in this particular time that are in small business and they've just about thrown in the towel? I know some businesses that say, I can't go on. I know I can't make it if I close for this amount of time. They're throwing in the towel for whatever reason. What would you tell them?
I would say, first of all, if you are going to look at the SBA loans and government loans that are available right now, I see a lot more people getting success with smaller local banks, credit unions, and even I had a friend who got funded by Square, the credit card processing company, in 3 days. I ended up getting mine through Chase just because that's where my corporate bank accounts are. But it took almost a month. Meanwhile, some of these smaller companies don't have as many banking clients, so you can get a lot more accomplished a lot quicker, especially if you're a small business. The other thing I would really stress is just the mindset. I think we've all gotten a little, I don't want to say lazy, but I know I spent a month where I did almost nothing. I got almost nothing done. I was sitting around hating myself for it because I usually am very busy. Start getting ready now. Don't wait for your business to open back up. Think about what you can do. Reach out to your clients. Talk to your clients. Let them know that you still care about them. I'll do this real quick. I ran a promotion this morning that I just thought of, and I was like, you know what? What's something that could help my clients and to help me right now? So I came up with the idea that I'm going to sell a $100 gift card for $50. So half price on a $100 gift card, but you know, it's one per client. So I just limited it, one per client. My clients can save $50 and it'll give me some revenue right now before we open back up. So I don't normally do e-commerce. So I set up like a Shopify website and I made the promotion, a little ad, and I posted it at 4 o'clock in the morning last night because I'm a lunatic and I don't sleep. I didn't do any paid advertising. I just put it on my Instagram and I put it on my Facebook and I emailed it out to my list. And I was very sincere. And I just said, hey, everybody, look, all of us are hurting right now. I said, here's a way where you guys can save $50. And at the same time, you could help support us until we reopen up. $50 for a $100 gift card, one per client. I said, the card never expires. We're running the sale for 1 week. And I sent it out. I thought maybe in the whole week, I'd sell $2,000 or $3,000 worth of gift cards. I sent it out at 4 o'clock. Within 2 minutes, I started getting a couple of dings on the Shopify app. I haven't checked it while we've been on the phone, but right before we got on the phone, I had just passed $7,000 in sales.
What?
So literally $14,000 worth of gift cards and $7,000 worth of revenue right now. Do you know how much that's going to help me right now? Because we've had zero revenue since mid-March. Meanwhile, I have tons and tons of bills just piling up for the company. So to have $7,000 in hand right now is tremendous. And at the same time, my customers are all saving $50 and getting 50% off on a gift card. That just dawned on me. So try to be creative. Try to come up with win-win scenarios. Understand that, yes, you're broke and you're hurting right now, but so are all of your clients. And if there's some sort of win-win thing that you could come up with that. And the last thing I would say is just understand that none of us know what world we're going to be stepping out into in the next month or so. But I guarantee you it's not going to be the same world that we left. It's going to be different in certain ways. So just be flexible and pay attention. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears open. There are going to be opportunities here that you're never going to have in your entire lifetime again. And if you play your cards right now, I think all of us can set ourselves up so the next decade or so can be extremely fruitful for us.
That's really good advice for people. And it seems to me that it is a mindset. You know, I usually say to people, friends of mine that are having problems, I always say to them, don't let your brain become cement just because of this problem. I'm looking forward to next week to talk to you again with Mauricio. I'm sure he's as much of an inspiration to you as you are to him. And I'll tell you, he's already inspired me and I have not even met him. I'm so glad I know you, Jeff. I got to say, I really am.
I'm so glad I know you too, Tony. It's been a long time and I adore you.
Feeling is mutual. And one day I'll get a tattoo for you to remove, but I got to think about it. Anyway, but not now. I don't know. I'm afraid. No, I'm not. I think that there's some uniqueness in having like a completely virgin skin of body. I really do like my skin, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And tattoos motivate me to go to the gym because I like to look at them. I really do. Anyway, especially on big muscles. But anyway, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you so much for coming on the show. And thanks for speaking out to the audience as well. And we'll look forward to other talks. And I'll say to the audience, thank you so much for listening. We'll probably hear more from Jeff sooner than later because he's a friend of the show and he's a good friend of mine. And I'll say goodnight to everybody.
Good night. Thanks for having me. Love you guys.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.